every Thursday evening and sometimes on Sunday afternoons. I play basketball with a group of friends at a nearby school. Two of our congregants, Nikki Stevenson and her spouse, Amy, also play as part of that group. Many of you know Nikki and Amy. They always come to the early service and sit about midway back by the wall there, along with their two children. Nikki and Amy are former great college basketball players. Nikki played her college ball at Butler, and Amy played her college ball at Ball State University. And of course, as all of you know, I played my college ball at BPU, sometimes known as Bulpucky University, which means I didn't really play college basketball except in my dreams. But now I have the honor of playing with these former great college basketball players. It's their world. They let me live in it. Here's a picture, in case you don't know Amy and Nikki. Here's a picture of them and their two kids, Jacoby and Jessa, actually taken a little over a week ago when Nikki's 95-96 Butler team was inducted into the Butler Hall of Fame, one of their all-time great teams. And Nikki was the player that was chosen to be the chief spokesperson for the players at that ceremony. Really cool. In any event, in November of 2020, about a couple years ago now, Nikki came down with a severe case of bronchitis or COVID. They're not sure which, because she recovered from it quickly. But then, a week before Thanksgiving, she woke up one morning feeling like she had been hit by a bus. She had a temperature, her chest was heavy, and she couldn't catch her breath. For the next couple days, she laid in bed, utterly exhausted, unable to catch her breath, struggling through this until finally Amy demanded that she go to the emergency room, where they did x-rays and came up with a diagnosis that she had double pneumonia. Pneumonia had spread through both of her lungs, completely covering both of her lungs. They gave her a breathing treatment and then sent her home, because this was in the midst of COVID when they were trying to get people out of the hospital. But things just went from bad to worse. Her fever spiked. She found herself coughing, deep, heavy coughs, with every breath she took. Each breath became incredibly painful, so painful that she found herself consciously holding her breath 10 seconds, 20 seconds, 30 seconds, as long as she possibly could, so as to not have to take that next breath. In fact, unbeknownst to her, her coughing was so heavy she had broken several of her ribs, and hence the incredible pain that she was experiencing. And after several more days of this, each breath hurting like heck, she felt like she was reaching the end of her rope. She remembers laying there in bed one morning and thinking, "I think I just took my last breath. I can't bear to breathe again." And as she lay there holding her breath, she had reached the end of her rope. It was the lowest moment in her life. She was ready to give up. At that very moment, Amy walked into the room. And Nikki took one more breath and said to her, "Honey, I don't think I'm going to make it. I'm so sorry to leave you to raise our two kids alone." Now, in a few minutes, I'll come back to that story, but let's pause there for just a moment, because I have a question for you. Can you relate in one way or another to what Nikki was feeling? When in your life have you found yourself at the end of your rope, in one way or another, if not for health reasons, maybe financially, or in your job and career path, maybe in a relationship, or maybe your children going off the deep end, maybe depression, maybe addiction, the list is endless. Maybe parents that need extraordinary help that is testing you to your very limits. When in your life have you found yourself at one of those moments where you said to yourself, I don't think I can do this. I'm at the end of my rope. I'm down for the count. I ask because that's what we're going to talk about this morning. In moments of great adversity, how should we as people of faith respond? Where, how do we find the strength to push through it? Let's begin with prayer. God, we've all been there at one time or another. And at some point, we'll all be there again in our life. When we're down for the count, when we're at the end of our rope, as we dive into your holy word once again today, remind us where our strength comes from. Remind us how we fight our battles. We ask in the name of Jesus. Amen. Do you ever feel like this? Like the whole world is piling on you. Can you relate? Some of you have seen the movie Snow Dogs that tells the story of a dentist named Ted Brooks who is startled to discover that he has inherited a rustic cabin in Alaska with a full team of sled dogs. He's excited about his good fortune and anxious to embrace his great adventure. And so he takes a trip to Alaska to check out the rustic cabin and to get to know his sled dog team. And while he's there, one morning he saddles up, or whatever you do with dogs, ropes up the sled dogs and gets on the sled, and he's going to take them out for a spin because, you know, how hard can it be? And everything is going great until it isn't. At one point, the dogs get out of control, and they're running at full breakneck speed. As they round a corner, Ted is thrown from the sled and lands in a deep snowbank as the dogs race on ahead of him. As Ted gets up and dusts the snow off himself, he notices that his shadow on the ground is gradually overtaken by a much larger shadow. He turns and looks behind him, and there is a huge grizzly bear reared up on its back legs, baring its teeth. Ted screams and runs for his life. The bear gives chase just as the grizzly bear is about to catch Ted Brooks. As fate would have it, he slips off the edge of a cliff and hurtles downward 5 feet, 10 feet, 15 feet, 20 feet. He manages to land on a snow-filled small precipice, a little cliff jutting out from the edge of the larger cliff. And when he realizes he's not dead, he shouts, I'm alive! I'm alive! Only for the precipice to give way. Down, down he goes. He ends up on his backside, sliding like a bobsled, narrowly missing rocks and trees that are in front of him until he finally comes to rest down below in the valley. Thank God, safe at last. But then he realizes he's actually on a thin sheet of ice on a lake. And as he hears the cracking of the ice, he grabs his cell phone and dials 911, only to hear a pre-recorded message saying, you're outside the area of your cell coverage. If you would like to expand your coverage area, please call back in normal business hours. Ah, life, right? Sometimes it's one thing, and then it's another. Sometimes it's one thing after another. Problems, issues. A weasel walked into a bar. The bartender says, wow, I've never served a weasel before. What can I get you? Pop, goes the weasel. Soda pop. Pop goes, are you with me? Are you with me? Oh, yeah. when you're at that place in life where the pressure is so great, the stress so unbearable that you feel like you're going to pop like a weasel, I want you to remember three great spiritual principles that I call the biblical formula for conquering adversity. The first of these three principles is drawn from a classic Old Testament story. In Daniel chapter 3, we encounter three young Hebrew men. The Babylonians have just overrun the city of Jerusalem, and these three young men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, are being taken into captivity and hauled off back to Babylon, where they're put into a re-education program to learn to be loyal servants of Babylonian King Nebuchadnezzar. As part of their re-education effort, these three men are herded in with thousands of others to a huge ceremonial gathering where everyone is told that on cue, when the music begins to play, they should all bow down and worship this 60-foot golden statue of King Nebuchadnezzar that has been set up. And so when the music begins to play and the cue is given, everyone bows down before the king, except Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Imagine being one of only three who remains standing as thousands of others are bowed down in worship. King Nebuchadnezzar was not amused. He threatened the three with a fiery furnace and then gave them a second chance to comply. Still, they steadfastly refused. Daniel 3:17, they said, "If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God whom we serve is able to deliver us. But even if we're not delivered, we want you to know, Your Majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold that you have set up." The text tells us that Nebuchadnezzar was so furious, his face became distorted. He had the furnace heated 3, 4, 5, 7 times over, and then had the three young men thrown into the furnace. Verse 23, the three men fell down, bound into the furnace of blazing fire. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and rose up quickly. He said to his counselors, "Was it not three men that we threw bound into the fire? But I see four unbound walking in the middle of the fire, and they're not hurt. And the fourth looks like a son of the gods." That gives me goosebumps. When life throws at you more than you can take, remember, you are not alone. As the song says, there's another in the fire standing right there next to me, the Son of God, Jesus. The risen Christ is right there with you. If you want to live with spiritual power, you must internalize this core principle. When you're down for the count, when you're at the end of your rope, remember, I have a backup power generator. Because there is a supernatural presence that is with you wherever you are. Draw on that power. Expect that power to be manifest in your life. Believe and live as if you believe that you are never alone, and you won't be. True story. Time was running out for Lois Spoon. Lois had a great need, but she hadn't shared it with anyone. By 2 p.m. that day, she needed to have $153.27. And she had none of that. It was 1:30. She was 30 minutes away from needing that $153.27. She had just had lunch at a restaurant with some acquaintances from church and a visiting missionary from Romania. As a step of faith, at the end of the meal, Lois not only paid her own tab, but also the tab for the visiting missionary, believing that God is somehow going to provide. After lunch, she walked out to the parking lot, sat down in her vehicle, and leaned her head back against the headrest, realizing she had just 30 minutes to come up with this $153.27. She found herself thinking about the story in Matthew 17, where Jesus told Simon Peter that he would find money in the mouth of a fish. She chuckled to herself and prayed, God, I know you've got a fish out there for me somewhere. Show me where the lake is. You see, Lois is a cancer survivor. But in the aftermath of her cancer, she was experiencing severe lymphedema. When your lymph nodes are removed, and you often get lymphedema, and her arms would routinely swell and become very painful. Her physical therapist had told Lois that she was soon going to be going to a cutting-edge workshop conference for doctors, nurses, care providers that would share cutting-edge information about the latest treatments for lymphedema. And she said to Lois, you should come with me. I think I can get you in. All your expenses would be paid. You would just have to cover your round-trip airfare. $153.27. For Lois, this was a great opportunity. Maybe she would learn some of this conference that would make a revolutionary difference in her state of being, in her quality of life. So she so wanted to go, but with all of the bills from her cancer surgery, she didn't have it. So she was waiting and hoping and praying. She says, as I was sitting there in my vehicle, I looked in my rearview mirror and I saw a woman that had been at the lunch that she'd just been part of, Beverly Eaton from her church, backing out of her parking spot and then sort of haltingly pulling out of the parking lot, then slowly driving all the way around the restaurant back into the parking lot, and then pulling up behind her vehicle, stopped, got out, walked up to the passenger side of Lois' vehicle and said, Lois, I know you don't know me very well, but, and I hope this won't be offensive to you, a few weeks ago, I just felt God leading me to start putting aside money for you. So I started putting money in an envelope and accumulating it until I could get the courage to give it to you. I hope it won't be offensive, but I've got to do what God told me to do. So here, she says, and she the envelope on the passenger side of the seat and goes back to her car and takes off. Stunned, Lois picks up the envelope, opens it up, and starts counting the money. Remember, this is a true story. Lois Spoon herself tells the story. She says, I started counting the money, and oh my goodness, it was $153.27 to the penny. Experiences like that are a powerful reminder that there is so much more to the reality that surrounds us than meets the eye. Experiences like that are a powerful reminder that we are surrounded by supernatural power. That doesn't mean I'm always going to get exactly what I ask for. Miracles, by definition, are rare, but miracles like the one Lois Spoon experienced are a profound reminder to us that we are never alone, that we are surrounded by a presence and power. Draw on that power. Expect that power to be manifest in your life. Live as if you believe you will never be alone, and you won't. Here then is the first core principle for overcoming adversity in our lives. Realize and internalize that you are never alone. There's another in the fire. Which then leads us to the second great principle. In times of great adversity, realizing that we are not alone, keep pushing forward with ferocious determination, stubbornly refusing to yield. One of the chief characteristics of people of faith is supposed to be stubborn determination. The Bible refers to this as perseverance or endurance. Colossians chapter 1, verse 11, be strengthened with all power according to God's glorious might, so that you may have what? Great endurance and patience. You heard Byron share our scripture passage a little bit earlier, where in James 1, 2 through 4, James, the brother of Jesus, says, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of any kind, consider it nothing but joy, because you know that the testing of your faith produces what? Endurance. And let endurance have its full effect, so that you may be mature and complete, lacking in nothing. Revelation 14:12 simply says, this is a call for the endurance of the saints. Endurance is what psychologists call resiliency. Resiliency is an attitude that says, no matter what life throws at me, I refuse to say uncle. And here's the thing about resiliency. It's not like some people have it and some people don't. Resiliency is a choice that we make. Persevering through great adversity in our lives requires a conscious decision that I am going to push through. This past Tuesday night when I got home from the church, David was watching a rerun of Little House on the Prairie. It was an episode about a little girl named Jenny, looked to be about 8 years old, who had gone through a near drowning experience. She blacked out and they were able to revive her. But in the aftermath of this, she was left with stroke-like symptoms. So her speech was halting, and her physical movement was awkward and distorted. She went through a number of months of recovering from what she had experienced. And then finally, it was time for her to go back to school. So her first day back to school, all the kids are anxious to hear, what happened? What happened when you almost died? One little kid said, when my uncle almost died, he said he saw a light. Did you see a light? Did you see an angel? The teacher said, Jenny, if you want to talk about it, you can, but you don't have to. Jenny stands up, and struggling to find her words, she tells the story of how she had started to drown and she had blacked out. And she said, I don't remember anything until I woke up. The kids were all disappointed. She had almost died and she didn't even have a good story to tell. Later at recess, all the kids were playing a baseball game. Jenny had once been the best baseball player, but now she sits off at a distance watching because her physical movement is so awkward, she can't play. Her nemesis, a little girl named Nancy, comes up to her and reminds her, you were the best baseball player, but not anymore. All the other kids are standoffish. They don't know what to say to Jenny. She becomes so emotionally distressed that she leaves school that day. She goes to the house of a neighbor of her family, an elderly retired doctor named Marvin. Marvin had become her best friend as she was recuperating from her drowning. And she starts to tell Marvin all about what had happened as they sit in his outdoor garden. She tells him how the kids were treating her, it was terrible, and I just can't go back there again. And instead of finding sympathy from Marvin, she's startled when Marvin gives her a little bit of tough love and challenges her. And she says, you don't understand. She gets angry. She says, I'm never going back to school. And she starts to walk out. That's when Marvin says to her, what are you going to do now? Go home and feel sorry for yourself? That'll do you a lot of good. Jenny says, you don't understand. You pretended to be my friend, but you don't care. You don't care at all. That's it. That's it, Marvin says. Get angry. It's good for you. I do it lots of times because I'm a doctor and I'm going blind. And that makes me damn angry because I'm still a good doctor and I can't help people anymore. Jenny, he says, I do understand and I do care. If I didn't care, I wouldn't have told you to go back to school. I didn't want you to. I wanted you to spend your days here with me. I couldn't wait till you'd come every morning. It made me feel that I was still able to help someone, that I was useful. And I wasn't so frightened about the future because you were around. But Jenny, you're my last patient. And you're getting better. You're getting better all the time. And you can still keep getting better as long as you fight. You got angry today? Good. Use it. Fight this thing. Show Nancy. Show them all. Jenny thinks about it for a second. And then she agrees. I'm going to go back to school tomorrow. And she did. The next day. The next day. The next. By the end of the episode, there's a voiceover that says, within a few months, Jenny was running to school. Not walking. Running to school. And by the end of the year, it was though the accident had never happened. Jenny was Marvin's last patient. And he was proud. Sisters and brothers, that is what endurance looks like. It is a conscious decision that says, I am going to relentlessly push through this, and when I run out of strength, I'll draw on God's supernatural strength. Nothing is going to stop me. As Winston Churchill once said, when you're going through hell, don't stop. The worst thing we can do when we face adversity is to allow ourselves to stop and allow ourselves to get stuck. Keep moving. Keep pressing forward. Be relentless in your determination. Keep pushing forward. Because you see, it's not over until you say it's over. A North Carolina attorney bought an expensive, exotic box of cigars that were so valuable that he decided to insure them against loss by theft or fire or whatever means. So he took out a $15,000 insurance policy on these cigars. 30 days later, after he had smoked all of his cigars, he got a bright idea. He filed an insurance claim, claiming that his cigars had been lost in a series of small fires. The insurance company was understandably outraged and refused to pay the claim, and the lawyer had the audacity to sue them. At trial, the judge was obviously sympathetic with the insurance company. This was an outrageous claim. But the judge pointed out to the insurance company that their insurance policy contract, in its plain language, said that the cigars were insured against fire, and there were no carve-outs or exceptions or unacceptable kinds of fire that were defined. And so the judge, feeling bound by the plain language of the contract, had no choice but to render a verdict in favor of the lawyer for $15,000. Rather than appealing the ruling, the insurance company made the payment, waited until the lawyer cashed the check, and then swore out a warrant to have the lawyer arrested for arson. He was placed on trial and convicted, sentenced to 24 months, and fined $24,000. The moral of the story being, it ain't over till it's over. No defeat in your life is final unless you decide it is. Did you get that? Nobody has the power to inflict on you your final defeat except you. No defeat in your life is final unless you decide it is. You may say, well, Jeff, what about death? Even death itself is not final unless you decide so. Jesus said, I'm the resurrection and the life. Whoever believes in me, though they die, they shall live. Embrace that promise. And even death itself is not final. Embrace that promise and you'll even be able to face death triumphantly and with joy. Yes, there's great suffering in death, but suffering and joy are not incompatible. We can even triumphantly move through death. All of which brings me back to where we started with Nikki Stevenson's story. There she was, laying in bed that morning, having reached the end of her rope, down for the count. She takes a breath. She's convinced it's probably the last breath she'll breathe. As she's counting silently under her breath, Amy, at that moment, just happens to walk into the room. Nikki draws another breath and tells her, honey, I'm sorry. I don't think I'm going to make it. I'm so sorry to leave you with two kids to raise alone. Nikki says, Amy fixed her eyes on me and said, yes, you are going to make it. And then Nikki says, Amy sat down and quietly began to talk to me about holding on and pushing through. And she began to remind me how much strength I have inside of me. And Nikki says, I began to feel a flicker of hope. I began to believe maybe I can push through this. And then Nikki says, Amy went and called my mom. And my mom called me and started chewing me out and saying, no child of mine is going to succumb to pneumonia. Basically, her mom's message was, buck it up, kid, and push through this. Nikki says, that was the turning point for me. I consciously resolved, I am going to get through this, whatever it takes. Nikki describes it this way. My glands were so swollen, I couldn't swallow hardly anything. I couldn't even sit up to do the breathing treatments because I was so weak. I was still coughing and having trouble breathing. I was in a ton of pain from my broken ribs. It was a very scary time, but she had now made a conscious decision. She was going to do those breathing treatments no matter what. And within 30 days, she was a lot better. And within 4 or 5 weeks after that, she was back out on the basketball court, determined that she was going to get back in basketball playing shape. The first night she was there, I said, Nikki, how are you feeling? How does it feel? She said, when I'm standing still, I'm fine. She says, when I run up and down the court, it feels like I'm breathing broken glass. But she was not going to stop it. And that night, I happened to be the one who was assigned to guard her. I remember thinking to myself, okay, I'm her pastor, so I guess I should go easy on her tonight, not try to take advantage of her. 5 minutes into this game, she gives me a fake, which I bid on, and she runs around me and does this sneaky underhanded layup. A few plays later, she's running off of a pick, and before I can fight off the pick, she's launching a shot from 20 feet that swishes the nets. And I'm thinking to myself, no more Mr. Nice Guy. This woman is ruthless. Nothing was going to stop her. She still has some residual complications, but she'll tell you, I'm alive, I'm healthy, I've got my wife and my two kids, and I can still play basketball. And boy, can she still play basketball. Watching her has taught me so much about how we fight our battles. She's one of my heroes. Never, never, never say uncle. As people of faith, we are called to have great endurance. When we reach the end of our rope, when we have no more power left, we start drawing on that supernatural power, and there's more power there than we can ever imagine. Here then are the first two great principles. How do we conquer adversity? Realize that you are never alone. There's another in the fire. Keep pushing forward with ferocious determination, stubbornly refusing to yield. And that then brings us to our third and final principle. As people of faith, we recognize that beyond every great hardship lies something of great beauty. And we allow that hope, that vision of the great beauty that's on the other side of the hardship to fuel us as we push through what we're facing. In Old Testament times, when the people of Israel were struggling and suffering mightily, God, speaking through the prophet Jeremiah, said to them in the words of Jeremiah 29:11, "I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord, plans for your welfare, not for harm, to give you a future of hope." As people of faith, we confess that we believe that no matter what we're facing, beyond that great struggle, through that great struggle, on the other side of it, is something good. Another true story. The year was 1960. Two guys make a $50 bet. Bennett Cerf, one of these guys, was the founder of Random House Publishers. Theo Geisel was one of his writers. Bennett says to Theo, his writer, "I'll bet you cannot write an entertaining children's storybook using no more than 50 different words." Theo always liked a good challenge, so Theo accepted the bet, sat down, and proceeded to write what would become the most famous and greatest children's book of all time, Green Eggs and Ham. Because you see, Theo Geisel is the person we know by his pen name, Dr. Seuss. So this treasured children's story came out of a bet that imposed strict constraints on Theo Geisel, and instead of taking that as constraint, instead of surrendering, saying it can't be done, it's impossible, he takes that as a challenge, pushes through it, and there's incredible beauty on the other side of it. It's the same with us as people of faith. Whatever constraints life puts on us, as people of faith, we say, "I know something beautiful can emerge from this." It is our statement of faith, Romans 8:28, "All things work together for good for those who love God." And the truth of that promise doesn't end at death's door. Because you see, God can take the greatest trials in our life and use them to shape our eternal souls in ways that beautify, strengthen, and empower us for all of time. Beauty that we will carry with us, not just through the rest of this life, but for all of eternity. You heard our scripture passage. Look at the words again. James 1:2, "The testing of your faith produces endurance, and when endurance has its full effect, you will be mature, complete, lacking in nothing, ready to thrive for the rest of your life and for the rest of all time." The beauty, the strength, the power that God builds into us through our greatest trials in this life bring value and treasure in shaping our souls that we will carry with us for the rest of eternity. So here is the third great principle. How do we conquer adversity? Realize you're never alone. 1, 2, keep pushing forward with ferocious determination. 3, consciously cultivate a positive vision of the beauty that lies on the other side of your hardship, both in this life and the next, and let that vision fuel you as you push through it. Let me close with this. It's another Nikki Stevenson story. I should have made her preach today's sermon. At Nikki and Amy's home, they have some old-growth maple trees. Nikki draws the sap out of those trees to create homemade maple syrup. She says that the sap straight out of the trees always is a crystal clear liquid. But when you put it on the stove and you bring it to a boil, she says it begins to change in color, in consistency, texture, and substance, and ends up with that golden brown color that we are accustomed to seeing. But here's the thing, Nikki says. Every batch of maple syrup she makes using the exact same process comes out looking different and unique, depending on the time of season, how much sunlight there's been, what the weather has been. She lined up a series of jars of maple syrup made from different batches over time and took a picture of them to illustrate. Notice how each batch has a slightly different hue, texture, and also then taste. Nikki sums it up this way. Each batch responds slightly different to the pressure of the boil, but they all come out beautiful and different and delicious in the end. It's the same with us. If we're open to it, God can take your life's greatest adversity and create something unique and beautiful in your eternal soul that you will carry with you throughout the rest of this life and for all of time. You are not alone. You can do this. Push through it. It's not over till you say it's over. There is great beauty that lies on the other side of your adversity. Where is it in your life today that you are feeling challenged to the very core of your being and you're tempted to say it's no use, I may as well give up? Take these three great spiritual principles that we've talked about today, work them, apply them, and you too will be a champion. Go team. Let's do this. Let's live our faith powerfully.